This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
A man unwilling to fight for what he wants deserves what he gets.
Please, sir. What am I going to tell my boy?
Try the truth. His father's a coward.
Hello and welcome back to a new episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time, our weekly show dedicated to season two of this great television series on ABC, The Once Upon a Time Show. That's what it's called. And it's about fairy tales and so much more. And today we're going to talk about captains and crocodiles. And joining me is the entire ship full of pirates here. First of all, welcome back, Deborah Shaben.
Hi.
From Nebraska.
Yes, I'm in Nebraska today.
Also joining us, the two sisters, Shelly and Lisa. Hi, Shelly. Hi, Lisa.
Hello.
Hi.
And also on the bridge today is Mr. David Antlos. Hey, Dave. Welcome to the show.
Yar.
Yar. We're not going to do the pirate speak thing, even though it is tempting.
It's not talk like a pirate day?
It's not talk like a pirate day. It's not podcast like a pirate day.
With some, yeah.
But we did get a lot of pirates and a lot of references to the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, and we will absolutely talk about that, as we will talk about many more things. But before we start our analysis of this week's episode, let me do the rounds as usual and ask for your first impressions. Deborah, what did you think?
I am floored by the twist of how many people can Rumple really be? It's craziness.
Isn't it?
It's like multiple personalities.
It's like every fairy tale with an evil guy, somehow, you know, it turns out to be Rumple. And now he can even channel a crocodile. Who would have thought? Lisa, what did you think?
I was glad to see more about Belle and to see her join the ranks of princesses who can stand on their own two feet and tell other people what to do. So that was, or kick some rear end. That was kind of nice to see her come out of her shell this episode.
I like that too. And she definitely got the main stage this time. We've mm-hmm. missed her, and it's a great actress. And so you can really tell that that character is going to be more and more important, especially in relationship to Rumpelstiltskin. David, what was your first impression of this episode?
Floored would be a good description. Rumple is kind of all over the map. He's just every single bad guy almost. But the actor who does him is pretty good, because is awesome, because you know, sometimes you want to root for him, sometimes you just want him to go away. It was really good.
Excellent. And you, Shelley?
Oh, Rumple is my favorite character. I never want him to go away.
Me neither.
Oh, crippled. Crippled. That's the best word.
Crippled?
He's addicted. He's crippled. He's a, I know, he comes across as one who's always in control and someone of strength, but you find there's so much more to him, so much more that's broken in him. You want to talk about somebody who's really, truly searching for something. It's Rumple.
Absolutely. He's both a nightmare and a victim at the same time. And definitely the character in which the whole, you know, why does he do what he does is the best developed so far. But you see traces of that same struggle between, you know, being honest and being truthful and being afraid and thereby lying in a lot of characters. And that was also, I think, the big theme of this particular episode. It's this whole struggle between truth and these little white lies that can turn into something much worse than that, and that honesty is what brings people together, and dishonesty is what separates people and can ultimately, you know, kill people. Dramatic episode, dramatic developments. We're going to talk about all that, and but let's first talk about the first scene, which turns out to be a dream, a nightmare. Was that your first impression as well? When I saw that first scene, I was like, this is probably a dream. Did you all have that immediate thought, or Where he's like, no. What?
No, that caught me off guard. I'm like, wait, what? And yeah, they got me.
Caught me too. But I was so busy looking to see what was in Gold's shop.
Oh, there was a little.
When he turned into Rumple, it was like, oh.
I guess I've been watching way too many movies and TV shows where they start an episode like that, where it's all a dream. I'm watching House MD right now, and every season there is an episode like that where something terrible happens, and it's like, and then he wakes up in his bed and he's like all sweaty, and it's like, oh, it was a dream. And then usually something like that, something that we saw in the dream, happens after all. What I was wondering is why the whole episode with the axe and this. You know, Grumpy being grumpy about Rumpelstiltskin having his axe. Of course, we saw the mines later on. Is that the only reason that we saw this, or is there something more to this dream?
It's a battle. Belle is battling for Rumpelstiltskin's soul. She wants him to change and become the man she knows he can be, and she doesn't know how to reach him. And every time she thinks she's reached out to him, that he's changing for her, she's terrified that he's going to slip back into the and I was talking to Lisa about this earlier, about mm-hmm. into the addict that he really is.
I like that qualification of him as an addict. He's a power addict, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Magic. He said it at the end. He cannot let it go. Magic is his crutch. He lost the one thing that was... the only thing he truly loved, the one thing that was the most important to him, because he couldn't let go of the magic. And even here, confronted with Belle, he's still playing with that magic. It's a crutch he can't walk without.
I like that. It's his crutch, and in a way, it's his crack. It's
right.
A very addicting drug. And well, the big revelation is that we start to see that he realizes what he does. His evil gets worse because he knows it's bad. And he knows that he's using magic for his own purposes, but he can't let it go anyway. I mean,
when he starts to let go of the pain, when he starts to heal, I think that's when we'll see an attempt at true redemption from him. And same thing with Regina. I think even in the last episode or the one before, where she made that small step, and we all talk, did she or isn't she? Is she or isn't she trying to be redeemed? So,
right.
I don't know.
And then Belle, in the chat room, there's a discussion about this as well. And JMO says, well, Belle is actually trying to stage an intervention here to get him off that drug, of that magic, and take him away from that addiction. And I've got a little clip which introduces this whole theme, because why is he so addicted to it? Why does he need this magic? Let's listen.
Why did you bring magic here?
I've told you, magic is power.
Why do you need it? Tell me. You don't need power, Rumple. You need courage.
I love that. You don't need power, you need courage. And, well...
And then Rumple turns into the straw man, you know, from Wizard of Oz, and... No. For the lion, I'm sorry.
Oh yeah,
they add another.
Nice.
Definitely a theme from the Wizard of Oz as well.
Yeah, I loved when she said that, because it was almost like twisting that knife. Because in fairy tale world, you know, his wife kept calling him needed courage and calling him and then she says the same thing to him, and it almost felt sorry for him for a minute. At least I did.
But she doesn't say it in a. To hurt him, it's like a wake-up call. It's like, come on, you need courage,
But
it's
haven't really changed at all. Yeah.
But she's
just stating a fact.
But she has hope for him, which is different from all the other people in the fairy tale flashbacks that we see. They're all calling him a coward and mm-hmm. degrading him, humiliating him, and he knows that he's a coward. That's why he tries to grab the magic to... almost to defend himself, to defend what he loves, or the people that he loves, and then he gets betrayed anyway. And so it's he's a scarred person. But I think that Belle is again, it's like an intervention. It's, you are a drug addict, you don't need magic if you would only trust in yourself. which is ultimately what he doesn't do. He thinks he needs that power to stay in control and to stop losing things. This episode is also a lot about loss, about losing people. I mean, that's why Rumpel joins forces with Prince Charming. It's like we both lost the love of our life, and we're both trying to get her back. And I think very almost as an illustration of that, or as a metaphor, you know, speaking of loss, of course, Captain Hook, we see how he loses something pretty vital, which is his right hand, I think, or is it left hand? I'm not sure about that.
Left. But, I think it's left. Mm-hmm.
And it's of course something that is part of the original story of Peter Pan. But I think in this context, and in the context of this episode, that is all about loss. It almost feels like something like that was bound to happen. It's like Luke Skywalker losing his hand in his fight with his father. You know, it's not just about the loss of his hand. It's also about the loss of the relationship that happens there, and the loss of a limb is a translation of that. What would happen if Rumpel would be courageous? I mean, what are the moments in this episode that he could have made a different choice?
He could have stopped her probably from walking out the door in the first place. If he would have just, I mean, she gave him, Belle gave him, asked him, like, why do you need it? He could have probably stopped her from leaving right there if he would have just told her what he had to wait the entire episode to tell her.
Now, he had that opportunity to be honest with her. But, you know, I don't think he really realized how important it was and how much I don't think he realized what he needed to do to keep her in his life until he had the conversation with Charming. And he asked, how do you, and I noticed he said Mary Margaret, how yes. do you and Mary Margaret make that work? I mean, how do you do it?
We're going to talk about that later on. I think he also explains to us, I think, why he couldn't find that courage. Basically, when he talks with his wife, in the fairy tale flashback, he's like, well, at least I'm alive. I'm here with you. And had I gone out to fight, I would have been dead. So is that an expression? Is that him being a coward, or is that just him being realistic? Is he truly a coward, or did he become a coward the moment that he tried to grab the magic? Like, what would I have done in that situation when you're like challenged to, you know, join the army, basically probably losing your life and thereby, you know, losing your family for what? For what cause, you know? Yeah.
Father, have you ever read Stephen Crane's book, The Red Badge of Courage?
No.
There's an American novel. There's an American novel here by Stephen Crane. It's never gone out of print. It's called The Red Badge of Courage. And I will bet you dollars to donuts that the writers here are fans of the book, because in a nutshell, it's the story of a Civil War soldier who goes off to fight in a battle, and he ends up fleeing and he's terrified. He runs away. And in the very first chapter, his mother has given him the advice that she doesn't care whether he earns himself a praiseworthy name. She instructs him to meet his responsibilities honestly and squarely, even if it means sacrificing his own life. And then, of course, he's terrified and he runs away. He can't do it. It's an excellent book. It was one of the first novels that really addressed war from a realistic perspective, and it was lauded and applauded all over the world. But when Mila says, or he asks her, he says, you have responsibilities. And she's so hateful to him. She says, you mean like being a man and fighting in the ogre wars? And that parallel hit me a day after I watched it, that here's the mother had told him he has responsibilities, and that is to fight and, if it need be, to die. And she says, other women became honored widows, and I became lashed to the village coward. So we don't know how he got his physical limp and crutch, whether he went back or whether he was injured and came out. But I see kind of the red badge of courage in there, that he ran from the battlefield, the whole notion of fight or flee, and he fleed.
And at the same time, I feel sorry for him, because it's so understandable that he did and that he was afraid, because he was a pretty kind of normal guy and was not strong. And you know, he's, when you see him, his former self, you're like, yeah, you would probably be killed in an hour, you know, on the battlefield. So I think that it's not just cowardice. It's also because he didn't want to risk losing his wife and his son, which he loses anyway. But and just the way that they talk down to him, well, not his son, but his wife. And then later on, the humiliation when he is in the bar, you know, it's you feel sorry. And then he's begging and it's like, oh, you would hope how different would the whole world be if someone would have had compassion with him and would have forgiven him. Instead, they're just like, yeah, you're just a coward, you know. And it's also pinning someone down on one mistake. It's like, you are a coward. It's not like, oh, you could have been so much more courageous, which is basically Belle's attitude. Belle is not, you're a coward, and therefore, you know, I want to get rid of you. No, she's hoping. She's seeing that there is a different side, and there's perhaps a different Rumpelstiltskin somewhere hidden there that could come out if only he would let it, if only he would leave that grip, that addiction to, you know, magic, which isn't the solution for the ultimate problem.
Trust the librarian to not judge a book by its cover, I guess.
Hey, I like that. Wow. I wish I had a little jingle that I could play here, like a ding. the quote of the week. Now, Belle is confronting Rumpelstiltskin after she has seen him in the basement spinning gold, and he's sitting there at his spinning wheel. So we learn that Rumpelstiltskin has a lot of power and a lot of magic, and so he's able to spin gold, and he's mixing it in a little bottle with purple. I don't know if it's ooze or if it's more like dust.
Yeah,
or something.
Alchemy. It's real life alchemy.
But what is he doing there?
Trying he's to making create a potion. Make a new potion.
Yeah, magic.
That's what he told alchemy, her. He was... Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say alchemy is the theory that you can take gold and turn it into magic. This isn't the first, you know, time we've seen it. It's in a lot of different types of books.
He's on a quest to break the new curse, right? The line, the city line, or I don't know how to, the town line. So is that what he's after, or is this like an intermediate potion that he's making? I was wondering, why is he using gold? I've never seen him using gold in combination with magic.
Maybe it takes magic for him to spin it into the gold, and then, you know, there's some extra, you know, magic property from that.
Yeah.
He says he was practicing.
We never saw him spinning. We never saw him spinning into gold up until now in Storybrooke.
We did in the Belle episode.
Oh,
in Storybrooke he was doing it, or in
no,
fairy
not
tale?
In Storybrooke. Sorry, in fairy
That's
tale.
What I'm saying. Yeah. In Storybrooke he hasn't been able to. So this is the first. So I'm assuming he needed the magic there to do that.
Inge in the chat room says alchemy. You know, it's just this whole quest of to be able to create gold and to find the you know the whole formula to make that perhaps I was just wondering if we will ever see what he's going to do with that little brewed potion that he has.
Oh, we always get to see that. That's you always get to see what he's concocting, because you know it'll come up in the next, you know, episode.
Well, didn't he say he wants to go find Bay? He wants to be able to leave town, so he wants to find a way to get rid of the memory curse. But what's interesting is that he always had his memory. So how does he even know that he would lose it if he crossed the town line? Because he didn't lose it before.
He doesn't know, but he's not willing to take the chance.
Yeah, he's afraid. Sure. Again, he's a coward. I think he's
get
afraid.
Get Regina to go first.
He tries to brace himself with magic, and JMO, again, in the chat room, has a good remark. Rumpelstiltskin apparently also used gold when he made the potion that turned Geppetto's parents into puppets. So he was already using gold as an ingredient there as well. I guess it's just his staple go-to ingredient. He's got a lot of it, so.
I'm not clear on his. Maybe you guys have already come to this conclusion, but okay. At the end of season one, I mean, was the original curse broken, and then when Gold brought magic back. Did he keep them trapped there, or were they still trapped there before he tried to bring magic back?
Well, apparently it's a different curse, because that's what Rumpel says in this, or Gold says in this episode. It's like I think he calls it the second curse. So I'm not sure if he talks about like this is a new curse, or whether this curse was also there when the other curse was already, you know, keeping the town captive.
So I got the impression that it was another curse that maybe was created at the same time as the first, or that Regina, when she set the town boundary to keep them all in Storybrooke, it's still there. It retained that property because we know she got that curse again from her mother.
But Regina can't leave Storybrooke either. So I'm thinking perhaps the origin of this retainer curse is Cora. Perhaps it's, we saw that in the last episode or the first episode of the season where, you know, she's trying to escape her mother, and then Cora just, you know, casts this special spell which basically prevents her from leaving her mother. So perhaps Cora, perhaps in a future episode we'll see that it's Cora who defined that parameter. Sorry, I interrupted you, Deborah.
Oh, no, I was just going to say the two boundary curses, they're two completely different curses in a sense. Because the first season, the boundary curses, nobody could get past the boundary at all. It didn't even matter if you tried to, because something would happen to you and you'd be sent back. It wasn't even about memory loss. And now you can go across the boundary, you just lose your memory. So to me, it's almost two different curses, two different things going on.
So apparently Gold didn't remember his past, and he only started to remember when he heard Emma's name at Granny's. And this is according to the writers. So that the whole, that's the power of the name, which to speak with the words of Little Red Riding Hood, a name sometimes rings a bell. I love that. I was laughing out loud. That was a brilliant joke. It doesn't ring a bell.
They had some really good zingers in this one.
Yes.
That's funny.
Oh, boy. Well, and then we get this flashback where we see Rumpelstiltskin's wife. First time, I think, we see her.
Yeah.
And, of course, Bellfire is also back. Now, was this the same child actor that we've seen before?
I think he was younger, wasn't he?
That's what I thought too.
My girls thought he was younger.
Okay.
I was thinking the last one was like 12 or 13, you know, like almost a teenager. And this one seemed much younger than
Yeah. me. Yeah, he definitely had this, like an 8-year-old boy's voice at least. It's a very dramatic scene where Myla is basically drunk, I think. At least she behaves like she is. She's hanging out in this bar. We don't really see where it is, but there are pirates there. And apparently at the time, they were already wearing eyeshadow makeup. I mean, apparently it's a new thing for pirates. But anyway, and we discover that her name is Mila. It's M-I-L-A-H. Now, I did some research, and it actually, there are a lot of different explanations for this name. It could have a Slavonic origin, where it means pleasant or dear. It could also come from Latin, where it means something like rival or someone who imitates. I don't know about rival. I mean, I don't really see that in her character. Pleasant, certainly. Then there's also a Gothic origin where it means work. Well, I don't see that applying to Mila as far as we've seen her in this episode. It can also mean favor, grace, fame, or glory. And then also, this is very weird. In Hebrew, guess what Mila means? Circumcision. Like, no, I don't think so. A bit strange. Although it could refer to, of course, the whole procedure of circumcision was a religious act. It is a religious ritual to mark your bond with God. It's through the circumcision that you know, basically became a Jew and part of the people of God. So it could refer kind of indirectly to, you know, the faith. You know, because it was a sign of faith. If you were circumcised, you were part of you know, basically faithful to God. And this episode is a bit about faith and being trustworthy and breaking the bond, etc. But that might be a little bit far-fetched. And there is some cutting happening in this episode, but it's a hand, right? So anyway, it's kind of still a question mark. As to what, why Mila? There must be a reason for this name, but I couldn't find a definitive explanation. If there's anyone in the panel that has an idea or a theory, no. Me neither.
Nothing.
Well, and she's like dead now too. To so, yeah.
The next thing that we see is Rumpelstiltskin looking for, and so this must be later in the timeline. He's looking for a magic bean, and he finds this guy with a red hat who apparently is a fixer who's able to find anything that people want to find. And Rumpelstiltskin all of a sudden gets very, very Darth Vader-y, and I have a little sound clip to illustrate that.
It's not nice to spread rumors.
The bean.
Where is it?
I don't have it, but I can get it.
I swear.
You haven't heard my price.
I spin straw into gold. Price shouldn't be a problem.
Oh, I don't want money. I want eternal life.
Yeah. Only the Dark One has life eternal.
So you want my son? What I can do, what about youth?
Spin the clock back till you're a little boy again.
Close enough. Deal.
But remember, you fail to deliver. I spin the clock forward and turn you into dust.
Well, there you have it.
There's that first clock reference.
Where are the plans, princess? Don't act so surprised.
It is totally the Darth Vader grip. And I was wondering even, it was so similar that I was wondering if this was like a covert homage to Darth Vader. But very
of course, that they've been listening to you, Father. They had to.
Well, he's called the Dark One.
Father, they had to get a Star Wars reference in there.
Well, I don't think so, but it is. He's the Dark One, and Darth Vader is kind of the Dark Knight of the Sith, so I don't know. It might be on purpose, but it was cool, of course. And then we get a lot of interesting information. First of all, he's looking for that magic bean, so this, I guess, this must be after he lost Balefire, right?
Yes, and this is much later.
The fairy, the blue fairy, told him that that was the last magic bean left. And apparently this guy knows of certain other areas that still might have some magic left. And I'm thinking, with the whole episode in hindsight, perhaps that he found this bean on in Neverland. And Neverland seems to have kind of a separate status or like a... Almost, it's a different reality than the reality of the Enchanted Forest, and so.
Well, isn't that kind of the conversation that Gold has with Smee, or Smee has with somebody? Yeah, I think it was Gold, where he says, "Well, you know, why isn't he here? He, you know, we don't know why. I've never seen Hook here, and but they were in Neverland mm-hmm. when they."
Yeah. And Neverland seems to be, just like Storybrooke, seems to be in a different dimension, basically. We'll talk about how they get there. But you need some kind of a portal, even to get to Neverland. So, I don't know. It's interesting that Rumpelstiltskin, even though he's so powerful, doesn't seem to have a clue about other dimensions.
No, but Jefferson is the portal jumper.
Yeah, true. But there might be more portal jumpers, and Smee might be one of them.
He did say he got the bean from the docks, from the ships. The ships return with treasures that they don't always understand.
Well, because
he trades in those objects.
The ships, I think, we think of faraway countries, but now I'm thinking, well, these ships come from other dimensions. They travel back and forth between, let's say, the world of Neverland and then the world of the Enchanted Forest. And probably even more, because these ships, I'm jumping ahead, but at the end of the episode, we see that the ships are still there and the island is still there. Neverland is, if that's Neverland, it's still there. And so the ships can actually travel from Neverland to this world, which is pretty cool.
Well, about,
I think when the curse was enacted, all the other worlds broke and came together. I think that's why Mulan is there and Hook is there. And
I thought the same thing. That maybe all those worlds kind of merge so that everybody's thrown together. Because that would explain all of the mixing.
Jefferson is in Storybrooke, but he was trapped in Wonderland. But Cora was trapped in Wonderland. Cora is now on the island, the safe haven. So the big question is, when the curse broke, again, why are some people in Storybrooke? Why were they brought with her? See, at the end of in the end of this first season, Rumpelstiltskin says to Regina, I knew you brought her with you. I knew you brought her. You couldn't resist. And so I'm wondering if everybody left behind, if Cora gathered them all together.
Who knows? And so the curse might have had a side effect that perhaps Regina wasn't aware of. And it gathered the rest of the magic breadcrumbs onto this one island, which, now that I think of it, that island where all these fairy tale characters are brought together and it's a big mix-up of all different stories and realities, it's probably not Neverland, it is Disneyland. Don't you think? It has everything on it. It's a metaphor for Disneyland.
They chose the island. Lancelot, who we now know as Cora, tells Snow and Emma that they gathered there. It was the only place that was safe from all the ogres. The ogres have been released. Everything's been released.
Yeah.
And this was the only safe haven, was this island. That's why they were there.
Well, Disneyland has very good pet control, right? So that might be the reason that ogres are just eliminated during the night, just like crocodiles and other scary animals. At least that's what I gathered in Florida when I was visiting Disneyland.
You got that right. I've actually had to call pest control many, many times.
Yeah. You stumbled on some ogres after closing hours.
Yeah. They do come out at night.
Hey, interesting theory in the chat room, or at least a hypothesis. What if Balefire is Peter Pan?
That's what I'm hoping.
I'm thinking that could work.
But how?
Because he followed the magic bean, right? We don't know where the magic bean takes you. We just know it takes you somewhere else. So, and then Captain Hook followed a magic bean. So who's to say they don't go to the same place? I mean, Rumpel assumed he went to Storybrooke, or, you know, our world for some reason. But if there's many different realms or worlds or whatever, then why not?
I like that.
And it would make him still young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely, because he doesn't age. Nobody ages. That's why Cora still looks so good, because she's been on that island for 25 years. And
I think that's called Botox.
Botox. Yeah. That is another addiction in a different fairy tale land. Yes, definitely.
So then the question becomes, if he is Peter Pan, where is he? Did the curse suck him into real world, or is he stuck there?
Well, I think that Mr. Gold thinks that his son must be in the real world, because that's why he's so frustrated that he can't leave Storybrooke. But perhaps, well, in a way, perhaps Neverland is also in our current world. After all, at the end of the episode, they seem to want to sail from that island to Storybrooke. True. But Storybrooke being a port city.
What about the stranger?
Go ahead.
I say, what about the stranger we met at the beginning of the season, remember?
Oh, what about him?
What if the bird was Tinkerbell? I don't know.
Who is Tinkerbell?
Well, no, I said, what if that little bird that dropped him the note that said Chris has broken? You know what I'm saying? What if he is Peter Pan?
It could be.
What if he's Balefire and Peter Pan? And then he could also be Henry's dad. See, we just wrapped it all up.
Oh, my head hurts. One thing I was wondering regarding the magic bean, I mean, they'll probably prove me wrong, but I don't think I don't think Balefire ended up in Neverland to start with, just because, the reason he used the bean was to specifically take him and his dad to a place where there wasn't magic. That was the whole, idea, just to take Rumple somewhere where there wasn't magic so he wouldn't be the Dark One anymore. That'd be the only way to break the curse without killing him. Hmm. But with the magic bean so that was where he wanted to go. It's like the bean acts takes you where you want to go. And with Captain Hook, he said, "We're going to Neverland," and then he drops the bean and then they go into Neverland. How else? I mean, it's like he told the bean, "We're going to go to Neverland. Take us there."
Right. So it's kind of a magic bean version of Siri. Like, Siri, take me to Neverland. I cannot find Neverland on my new map application. Yeah. It's not there. Do you want to go to Disneyland instead? We're getting off topic here. But what if, some interesting theories in the chat room again, Peter Pan in the original story travels back and forth between Neverland and London, right? And it's thanks to Tinkerbell that he can do that. What if he got stuck during one of those travels in the world of Storybrooke or in our world, doesn't know how to get back to Neverland, and then basically grows up and becomes this guy that we saw in the beginning of the
second season. Was the one who got the postcard.
Yeah.
That's what I thought Bale was. I thought that was him. But there could, he had all that London poster on his, so it could be both.
Oh, he did?
What was London?
Well, in the background of that scene where we see the stranger in his room in New York City, he had the London poster. So I thought that might have been Peter Pan and
Dreamcatcher
and Bale. Yeah, because
that's it.
Oh, it is. You're right. It's got to be. Because I was just thinking, what if Bale came forward into the real world, right?
Uh-huh.
And he would have been an orphan. He wouldn't have known anybody or anything. But then what if he was trying to get back to his dad? Because he thought his dad was coming with him.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So if he'd been trying to get back to his father and he found the portal back to Neverland, he could have lived there as Pan. This explains the time difference. He could have lived there as Pan, come back and forth. And like we saw the Robin Williams movie Hook,
he
could have come back and finally started to live and gone back and forth as he needed to.
Yeah, that's the whole point in Neverland, is that so that the boys never grow up.
But it would have stopped when the curse broke. I mean, when the curse was enacted, he wouldn't have been able to travel back again into Neverland. So maybe Tink is with him and is the one that sent the message broken. Now he may be able to travel back. He may be the one that is able to get them back and forth between the two portals.
Oh, and I see some more elaborations on this theory in the chat room. And then Hook hates Peter Pan because it was his dad, a.k.a. Rumpelstiltskin, that cut his hand off and killed Mila.
Well, and Peter Pan, the crocodile,
totally
is what...
jive.
Yeah, the crocodile is what took, Hook's hand.
Yes.
Ate the hand, yeah.
Yeah.
Peter Pan cut it off and...
Yeah.
Fascinating. I love
it. And don't forget the clock.
The clock was
good.
Tick tock, tick tock. I didn't catch it, I have to be honest. But when someone in the chat room said tick tock, it's the crocodile clock. I'm like, duh, of course. How brilliant. And there's more. There's more talk.
That was the best line.
When he's negotiating with Smee, he's also, I can turn the clock back or I can turn it forward. So there's this whole, control of the clock. And this is the first time that I noticed this. Rumpelstiltskin is wearing this crocodile jacket of crocodile skin.
It's a vest.
And I think he's been wearing that all the time, but I always assumed it was snake stuff. But it makes so much sense. So we could have known that he was the crocodile. It was right on our nose for the entire first season.
I love it. When I realized that's where they were going, I just love that. I love the way they twist it all up and make Rumple everybody.
Yeah. It's brilliant. I have got a little sound clip from the moment that we hear that he actually might be the crocodile.
Even gutter rats have more manners than you just displayed.
No, I'm so sorry, sir.
I was wrong. Not a rat at all. More like a crocodile.
There you have it. More like a crocodile. Yeah. With a very tough skin. But if you cut through the skin, the actual... Have you ever eaten crocodile? Yes.
I've had alligator.
Alligator, yeah.
I've had crocodile tail when I was in Australia, and it's very tender meat. Mm-hmm. It tastes like chicken.
Yeah, exactly. Everything tastes like chicken.
Yes, especially if you don't know what it is. Tick tock, tick tock. So he is the crocodile, and that I was very surprised that there was this confrontation between Captain Hook. I kind of expected Hook to be much more menacing, mm-hmm. and instead he's not that powerful.
Actually, then maybe the cutting of his hand and killing of his love is what made him become bad. Remember how we keep talking about evil, you know, was made because of this
evil
lack
comes
of
from
love.
Pain.
Yeah.
That's it.
In the original Peter Pan, Hook isn't, he's portrayed as bumbling. He's portrayed as not powerful at all, you know, that he's easily vested by Peter Pan.
And he's kind of, yeah, and he's posing all the time. He's pretending to be this dangerous pirate, but he's actually very insecure.
Which maybe that's
insecure.
Why they put the eyeliner.
I don't want to go into the psychology of pirate eyeliners, but
I was glad that they didn't, because last week we speculated that maybe they'd kind of go Pirates of the Caribbean on us with the pirates. And I was actually thankful that they didn't. I was glad to see that. He played the character besides the eyeliner.
Yeah,
he
didn't have a swagger, and he didn't have a strange way of talking. But there were a lot of references visually to the Pirates of the Caribbean. I mean, I was wondering where they filmed this, because the harbor was of course fake, and it was a set, and it was pretty obvious that it was. But then, and he actually even looked like one of the, you know, like the Pirates of the Caribbean. Attraction, the ride in Disney World, same kind of. I mean, it looks fake there too, but then when they step on the boat, you're like, wow, that is a real boat. And that background with the mountains and the lake, that is not green screen stuff. That's a real setting. So I wonder where this was filmed. Did anyone recognize that boat? Was that It's certainly much smaller than the boats that we saw in Pirates of the Caribbean, because I know that they built a model for those movies on a ponton. It was a huge ship, but this one almost looked like a replica that is used normally, and they just rented it probably for the movie. But I couldn't figure out where they filmed this. Would they have gone to the Caribbean or?
Oh, no. I can't imagine.
No, that would have been too expensive.
Yeah.
Probably cheaper to make Vancouver look like the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a lot of sound stages that have, you know, in Disney Hollywood Studios is one that still has it, where they put in the pool for, you know, for just for filming things like that, so they could film, you know, pool scenes and boat scenes and underwater scenes. And so it's probably green screen and interior pool, you know, with, you know, a kind of a makeshift,
well,
you know, pirate ship.
Apparently they filmed this, according to Inga in the chat, they filmed this outside the village posing for Storybrook. This is in Steveston, Canada. And I've got a link here.
It's a real ship.
It's a real ship. This ship is called the Lady Washington. Mm-hmm. And they are actually filming there as we speak. So this is the we know that the ship is going to return. This might be a minor spoiler. But actually it is a spoiler. There are some photos of what they're filming there. And this must be of an episode way into the second season. But it is pretty cool that they used this real ship, and this was still filmed in Canada.
Oh, and I have a little bit more trivia for you.
Okay.
It's the exact same ship they used in the first Pirates of the Caribbean movie. It was
really?
The HMS Interceptor, the fastest ship.
Oh,
there
cool.
you go.
So it was. Excellent. And a lot of the pirates also, they had the same hats and the same kind of clothes. And it looked a bit smaller than what we saw in the Pirates of the Caribbean. Less pirates, less extras, but but pretty cool. I was looking at all the jewelry, the bling that they had, and it was like, what, is the thing that the jewelry that Rumpel gives to Belle, is that what the pirate is wearing? But I don't think so. He was having it was like a chain with a skull on it, and I don't think there was anything particular about that. But you start to kind of like scrutinize the screen for details, even if they're not there. But it looked real, and I was happy with that, because when I heard they were going to be a pirate, I was like, it's going to be this green screen CGI fakery, and how can they ever match what we saw in a Pirates of the Caribbean? But I was so glad to see that they used a real ship, because it makes it so much more, I don't know, real. Well, let's talk about the whole theme of truth, honesty, cowardice, lies, and what it does to relationship. I've got a little intro jingle for that.
Look, can I ask you a question about you and Mary Margaret? How does that work?
Are you asking dating advice?
Of course not, no.
Honesty. That's how we did it. Hard work and being honest with one another.
Well, I don't lie.
There's a difference between literal truth and honesty of the heart. Nothing taught me that more than this curse.
Okay. Why does he say that? There's a difference between honesty and what was it? Honesty of the heart or truth? Literal truth and the honesty of the heart? What is he referring to? I was a little bit fuzzy on that.
I thought he meant saying an out-and-out lie. You know, it could be honesty or telling the truth, but saying someone else explained.
Intent.
You know what I'm saying?
No, it's intent. What he's talking about is intent of lie of why are you? What's the motivation behind you saying this versus that? You know, and I guess you know. He's not saying that, hey, I don't lie. I'm just saying that my motivation is, you know, a pure of heart.
Well, you can say
that, what I gather.
You can say something is literally true, but if you're not, when he says honesty of the heart, I get more of a opening yourself up, you know, mm-hmm. opening yourself to rejection, opening yourself, being completely honest about your feelings and what's inside, not just, you know, yes, the sky is blue. Well, that's the literal truth, but laying yourself open and trusting that other person, and that trust is what builds relationship. So, I mean, even his wife Mila, when she fell in love with Killian Jones, was that Hook's name, Killian Jones? She fell in love with him the first night, but she says, "I didn't know how to tell you the truth."
Yes, yeah. She too. She's conflicted, and she just.
She's a coward.
She's a coward too. Yeah, you're right about that. She is also a coward and dishonest. So that makes her criticism of Rumpel even more vicious in a way. Because she's reproaching him what she does herself. She's not honest either. And I was wondering if Charming is also referring to, you know, his season one relationship with Snow, where he basically also tries to hide that from his wife, and they pretend, and it's only when they're perfectly honest to everyone that things start to heal, and that but it also has its consequences if it's discovered. And for a long time, Snow is like the most hated person in town.
I think having the memories of David and Mary Margaret and their interaction in Storybrooke as they begin to wake up, I think having those memories combined with what he knows to be true from fairy tale land is what he means when he says, "Nothing taught me that more than this curse."
Hmm.
Because they were literally true with each other. You know, they were literally telling each other, "Yes, I'm married to Catherine, and I have feelings for you," but there was that difference between "I believe you, but I don't really believe you, but I want to believe you, but you did kill her, you didn't kill her." He really experienced that.
Yeah, that was a bit sidetracked. Sorry, by the Killian, because I missed that name. So I was wondering, what does it mean? Apparently, it's a... Also, this name has various meanings. But one of the meanings is war, strife, and bright-headed. That seems to work for a pirate. I'm not sure about the bright-headed qualification, but war and strife. And then Jones, Killian Jones. Could Jones be a reference to Davy Jones? Or is that just a regular pirate name?
I'm wondering if they just mashed two... Yeah, I think they just mashed a couple of names together to make it sound impressive.
Killian
my
does...
first thought was Davy Jones because of the Pirates of the Caribbean reference.
And I think Killian could be Celtic. So, yeah, I don't know. Seems to work in a pirate environment. But in Latin, it means blind. So, I don't know. Ooh. It's always a bit tricky with these names. Speaking of names, there's another name which... we've heard before, but I think I finally cracked a code, and it's not that revolutionary, but I was like, aha! It's Belle's father. Who and I laughed again about the Game of Thorns joke.
Yeah.
It's still funny. Yeah. I was like, did I laugh about this before? Yes, I did. Actually, I've already seen this, but it's such a good joke.
It's still funny. Yeah.
It's funny because it's you know, Game of Thrones, of course, but also because of the roses and the rose playing such a big role in the story of Belle and the Beast. But his name is Mo French. So mm-hmm. his last name is French. And his first name, Mo, well, that's from Elmo or Moses or Morris. It means to love. Well, that's for a father. Not a bad name. Savior can also mean savior. But then I was like Mo French, and I looked at various Once Upon a Time sites, and they were all like French. Oh, that must refer to the French origin of Belle and the Beast, of the original story, of the original fairy tale. Well, no, it's actually simpler. Mo French is, what is the French equivalent of the name Mo? It is Maurice. Yeah, and what is the name of the father in Belle and the Beast? It is Maurice. So he's just Maurice. I love that. And so that was cool. And then the other thing that I thought was a nice little reference at least the Disney version of Belle and the Beast was that she ends up in the library and that she loves books. And isn't that how she is portrayed in the movie, Deborah? It's a while since I watched that one.
Well, yeah, that's the whole point, is that she always has her nose stuck in a book, as her, you know, they introduced her character.
Yeah.
So she's a lover of books.
And that's actually based on, I think, one of the later versions of the story. The original story doesn't have that. And actually, in the original story, she has a couple of sisters. They're all bad sisters, and she's the only virtuous girl, of course, as in every fairy tale. But in a later version, she's actually from noble descent, and she just lives in a very poor town. So that's where probably the writers of the Disney version took the inspiration from, that she must be a very educated person. And so she doesn't care too much for, what's his name again? Watson?
Gaston,
who eats 5,000 eggs, and
so yeah, he got turned into a rose a long time ago.
Oh, that's right. He was kind of a wussy one, though.
So, and let's talk about going back to the Darth Vader grip scene. Isn't it interesting that Smee asks for eternal life? I was like, why? Yeah. Where does that come from?
I really thought that he was going to be Peter Pan. When he said that, I was thinking, he said, because Rumpelstiltskin's response was, I can't make you live forever, but I can turn back the clock and make you a boy. And I thought, oh, we're going to see Peter, you know, exactly. Peter Pan. But no, because obviously he's Smee. So I don't know. It was strange. I'm sure we'll get his backstory.
I guess the whole, the mention of eternal life, which has huge implications, like all the theological and philosophical bells started to ring when I heard that phrase. It's like, oh, the quest for eternal life, Harry Potter, Voldemort. but it could just have been a way to introduce this whole theme of Neverland, where, you know, time stands still and be an occasion for Rumpelstiltskin to make the the whole, you know, the clock reference, and so giving away that he is the crocodile clock. But it's, of course, and then, you know, he says that only the Dark One has eternal life, which is quite something to say, you know, only the Dark One has eternal life. But is that true? That would be my first question. Or is that just a perception of the Dark One, that he has eternal life? And yeah, he might be eternal in a way that that dark magic prevents him from dying. But is it eternal life? Is that life, to live your life like that? Or is it just like almost a parody of life? Does he really live?
It's even fake, because he can be killed.
Well, but only if someone else takes his place, right?
Correct.
Yeah, only if someone takes a dagger.
We know from the previous Dark One that having eternal life like that, so basically a life of evil, a life separated from love, it's the worst thing that can happen to you. And he's actually begging, and he's playing Rumpelstiltskin so that he is killed. He doesn't want that type of eternal life, which I think is, from a theological perspective, very interesting. Because if you look at what hell is, in at least in Catholic theology, hell is not just a, you know, big barbecue place where people are like having burn, you know, are suffering because of burn wounds. But eternal hell is just as eternal as eternal life, so life in heaven. But it's the opposite. Life in heaven is life with God, and God is the source of love. So it's the best life possible. We are created for that kind of life. And hell is the opposite. It's an eternity without love, being separated from love. So yes, it is eternal, but it's eternal suffering, because we are made for love. And if we don't have love, well, that's hell. That's already hell right now. So I think it's an interesting topic that they bring up here, that the Dark One, in this case Rumpelstiltskin, is actually already living or experiencing hell on Earth. And so if there is salvation for him, it will basically mean that he will have to open up for love, which he never really does. Even with Belle, who tries to save him, I mean, he seems to give in, and at the end of this episode there seems to be a little bit of an opening, but he can't. He's still a prisoner almost of his own
addiction.
Yeah, addiction.
Addiction. It's the closest he came was in Skin Deep when she kissed him, true love's kiss.
Yeah.
And he stopped it. He reversed it, because he couldn't let go of the power, because he couldn't let go of Bay, I suppose.
That, and true love is also a theme in this episode several times. True love, he hates, now that I think of it, true love, when Mila says that to him, he's like, true love. Is that the truth, you know? Is that what it is? Then I don't want it. So it's also a rejection. If truth, and that's perhaps what Charming refers to when he talks about the literal truth, and then like the honesty of the heart, it's like, well, if truth is I don't love you and I think you're a coward and I'm just going to hook up with this, I'm not going to hook up with this pirate. Hook up. Yeah, I know. It's lame. I tried to convince myself.
Okay, now we need that chime again, or that zing.
Now we need the whap, whap, whap. But so that kind of truth, the little truth, like say what it is, but without love, basically, it's truth without love. He doesn't want that. And it's a perversion of the truth. If truth is just truth, then it can hurt. It can destroy. It needs love.
He thought he loved Mila, and he thought Mila loved him in the beginning. And he sacrificed all these things for his love of Mila. But when it came time to stand up and fight for her, he couldn't do it. He was a coward, whatever.
Yeah.
He backed away. He whimpered. At the end, when he's dueling with Killian, she comes and she's fighting for him. He's got his hand in the guy's chest, and she is like, stop. I've got something you want. He says that you've come to save the life of your true love. And he says this, I didn't realize the power of true love before. Oh. So all this time, he didn't realize the true power. She was willing to sacrifice for him and fight for Killian and vice versa. And I just thought that was interesting, that he didn't realize the power of true love. And I'm wondering if from this moment on is when he was on his quest to find and bottle true love, knowing that would be the magic that could get him.
Oh, I like that. Yes. Yeah.
To bang.
Yeah. And actually, he later on, in terms of the chronology of the story, he will experience that power of true love with Belle kissing him. And that is so powerful that it even fights the effects of the dark curse, and it turns him back to normal.
And it frightens him.
That's why he's on this quest for true love. And now that everything is falling into place. Dan in the chat room says, you know what? The only thing that could save Rumpelstiltskin now is perhaps true love from his son Bale, or Balefire. So what if they will move the story towards, you know, him being the crocodile and then Captain Hook versus Peter Pan? Peter Pan turning out to be Bale. And so you've got this opposition, these arch enemies that somehow have to find each other in order to lift the effects of the curse and to truly save Rumpelstiltskin. Remind me again, in the Peter Pan story, the crocodile, when he's turned into a clock, he's dead, right? Or is there...
No, the crocodile, okay, the crocodile swallowed... Okay, the crocodile hook... I mean, okay, Peter Pan cut off Hook's hand.
Yes.
And then he threw the hand, and the crocodile ate it. And the crocodile loved the taste of Hook so much that he was always after Hook. And Hook was always terrified of the crocodile. And Hook threw a clock in there so the crocodile would tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock. And Hook would know, oh, there's the crocodile.
You know, oh, I remember.
And leave.
Yes.
Now, in the Robin Williams movie, Hook had made that crocodile into a clock.
The Robin Williams movie just messed it up for me. I was like, wasn't he turned into a clock? No, it's the...
In the cartoon, and Deborah, stop me if I'm wrong, but in the cartoon, when the crocodile is near, you hear that tick-tock, tick-tock, yeah. Mm-hmm. And Hook is terrified of it.
Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So...
So it's just a reference to the clock.
There's a couple different clocks in the original Peter Pan, and it didn't occur to me now that... You know, there's symbolic meaning behind the clocks. After all, is, you know, the fact that time freezes in Neverland,
mm-hmm.
and they're all fighting the clock to grow up.
That's why they are afraid. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Of the clock. It's a metaphor again. It has a deeper meaning. I love it.
Turn it backwards, or I can turn it forward.
So, again, referring to the chat room, what if the thing that brings Rumpelstiltskin and Peter Pan together? Peter Pan being Balefire in our hypothesis. What if the thing that brings them together is the common fight against Hook? That could be interesting. So it's pirate, and that would explain why we know that Captain Hook is going to play a major role in this season. Perhaps it's somehow I think that this is all kind of clicking together. Very cool. Let's see if there's anything else about this part of the story. What about this fight between Captain Hook and, well, I suppose he's not Captain Hook yet. He's about to become it. And Rumpelstiltskin. And then Rumpel quotes a poem, "Ships That Pass in the Night." And speak each other in passing. Or I think he only says ships that pass the night. Well, I think it's just one ship. Now, I was like, this must be something familiar either to the audience or something that I should know. So I Googled it. And it turns out this is a poem. It's part of a poem by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, mm-hmm. the most popular American poet of his day. So I assume this is something that Americans are taught in school about this guy. Okay. Being from Europe, I didn't recognize it, but the entire poem is "Ships that pass in the night and speak each other in passing, only a signal shown and a distant voice in the darkness. So on the ocean of life, we pass and speak one another, only a look and a voice, then darkness again and silence." It's a beautiful poem. Mm-hmm. And almost, it seems to be a poem about Rumpelstiltskin and his wife. It's this, you know, you pass, you speak to each other, but then you're alone again, and there's darkness and silence. And then it was like, well, this darkness, this there might be a reason that Rumpelstiltskin loves this poem, because it is about him. And then I looked up the Wikipedia entry about Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, and well, that's a pretty tragic story as well, because he lost his wife, at least his first wife. I don't remember if he remarried, but so there is a bit of tragedy in that story as well. And then reading ahead in this Wikipedia entry, I discovered that he was, among others, the writer of the Song of Hiawatha. And that, I was like, I know Hiawatha. Wasn't that a Disney story? Because I remember as a child, we had these little gramophone discs, you know, before the CD. I'm that old. And it was a Disney series, and we had a whole...
Yeah,
bunch
Hiawatha.
Of them.
I was like, Hiawatha, what?
Yeah.
Hiawatha. Okay, we called it, Pocahontas. In the Dutch version, it was called Hiawatha. Okay, I apologize. Little Hiawatha. oh, don't start with Indian names. The other day, I had to do a presentation text about the canonization of the first Indian saint. Oh, okay. And I had to pronounce her name, and nobody could tell me how to pronounce it. It was... What was it? Waka haka wita wika wata? Taka taka kwa kwita?
Tika wita? Is that how you say it?
The tika what now? Anyway, sidetracked again. So, Hiawatha. So I remember that story in a Disney version. I looked it up. It is actually an animated cartoon from 1937. And it is now, you can, if you want to watch it, and I suppose they restored it, it's on the Pocahontas Blu-ray as an extra. Now, I haven't seen it since forever, but I don't know, it might be far-fetched, but we might see Hiawatha. We might see Pocahontas as well.
Well, Pocahontas, sure. We could see her. She's probably a nice, one of those nice realms. So and a nice Disney feature film, so that could be a possibility.
Neverland did have an Indian tribe, so it's possible.
That's true.
That's
and
true.
Tiger Lily. Yep.
Tiger Lily. Who is Tiger Lily?
She was princess in the Peter Pan movie of the Native American tribe.
Oh, great! Yep. That's how they're gonna bring that together.
Yep. That would work. Yep.
That would totally work. Tiger Lily plus Hiawatha plus Pocahontas. Plus, Tika Wida. Oh no! Wait a second. That's something else.
Yeah.
Bring
that.
They bring
Nicotary.
Yeah.
So we see a nice parallel, and they do this a lot in Once Upon a Time, between the characters in the time frame of Fairy Tale Land or Once Upon a Time Land, and then modern day world. You've got Belle and Rumpel versus Mo. Equals Mila and Captain Hook versus Rumpel. It's this whole thing of, betrayal and I don't trust you and you need to leave me and give me my freedom. And Belle is kind of the pivoting character here, where they literally want to rob her from her memories, from her past. And, that's her father trying to send her into the mine. I thought it was a kind of a... I got reminiscent, like a...
Indiana Jones. I was like, ooh,
Indiana Jones.
Jones
and the Goonies. I was like...
Goonies. My husband said that.
We get a Goonies thrill ride in mines, but it ultimately didn't last long. And then there is this key, which is the key that could set her free, but she can't find it. And then it's actually Rumpelstiltskin that gives her another key, but it is the key to her future, literally. And it's because it's the library key. So I like that. It's all about.
It's almost a subliminal advertisement for the new ride that's coming to Disney World.
Oh, and which one would that be?
It's the Seven Dwarves Mine Ride, a mine cart ride.
You're
no, I'm serious.
Kidding? Really? They're gonna do that?
I think it is an advertisement.
It is a paid advertisement. This is just. Product placement. How cool is that? Because I love that ride with the Snow White and Seven Dwarfs, but it is a little bit underwhelming, especially for modern kids that are used to something a little bit more exciting. And it's kind of slow and not very scary. And Oh, interesting. So,
Can I just say something about Belle real quick?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, everybody in this whole show is wearing long sleeves and jackets and everything, and she is running around town in open-toed shoes, a shorty short little flare skirt, and sleeveless outfit.
Yes. Well, any theories why that is?
Every time. Oh, she left the jacket accidentally, and Gold gave her the jacket because she had nothing for the cold, and that's what makes Ruby kind of go, okay, well, maybe I'll help you. But, hello! No clothes. Everybody else is in a jacket. So
actually, she was running around like that made me think, where'd she get all the clothes? Because you can't leave and FedEx. I mean, how long did it take to get there?
And they're so stylish.
I thought it was perfect. I thought she looked really cute. I didn't even notice that she was wearing short sleeves. Maybe it's finally summer.
Inge in the chat room is, well, duh, she's from Australia. So her seasons are mixed up. They're walking around like that in wintertime.
Nice.
I was just thinking she's been trapped in this little bitty, you know, room, you know, insane asylum room place for 28 years. Heck, I would be running around too.
Well, speaking of clothes and Belle and Little Red Riding Hood, what's her name in storybook?
Ruby.
Ruby. There is an interesting color switch going on. At one point, they're in this cafe. And Ruby, of course, is wearing red. Although her costume, her outfit, made me think back of what Michael Jackson used to wear. Didn't you get that same vibe? It's like, that looks like a Michael Jackson thing with the hat and everything. Yeah. Anyway, and then Ruby is all in blue. And then at the end of the episode, it's the opposite. Ruby is wearing blue, and now Belle is wearing red.
Belle was in that red and black, kind of reminiscent of some of Gold's colors. Gold has worn that black suit, the pinstripe black suit with the red tie or the red shirt.
Wasn't it purple?
But he was in purple in this episode.
But I thought that in the past, Gold was always
in purple.
Charming
was in purple in this episode.
Oh.
But then he's been out down in the mines with the dwarves who were in blue with purple hats, mining for fairy dust to gather enough magic so that they can open a portal.
Huh. Emma has a red jacket. That's true. I was just wondering why the switch. I mean, there must be a purpose for that. Perhaps it could be just a symbol of Belle learning from Ruby. And literally, you know, she's the courage that Ruby always has. She makes that her own, and she was this scared person that was locked up and always the victim of people that were more powerful. And now for the first time, she's taking control of her own future. And that's why she's wearing red. Red being kind of a, you know, an audacious color. But I don't know. Might be a little bit too far-fetched. But
could be the wolf thing.
The wolf thing.
Yeah, I did like the way they brought that back up.
Yes, yeah. The sniffing. Well, yes. You know, when we heard this jacket, or what was it, or the pullover, that's actually, it's mine, it's not Belle's. I was like, oh, he needs that for the curse, you know, because he told Prince Charming that that only works if she has something that belongs to me, which is not the case. And I was like, hey, he's going to use that. And no, actually, they don't need it because, you know, the wolf, Ruby the wolf.
He has to have something that belongs to her, and since she was brought over without anything, she has nothing that belongs to her.
Yeah, but I wonder if that means they're going to have Ruby. We're going to address the issue of Ruby, because now I assume she can. Is she going to have to start wearing her, you know, Red Riding Hood thing,
is she going to wolf out every month, or?
Yeah, no. People, you're going to end up with bodies lying around the story, right?
Well, it's almost, it's almost Halloween, so some wolf howling could be a good thing to do next week. I don't know.
I say they previewed pretty good for Halloween next week.
Okay, well, yes, we don't talk about that yet. Perhaps at the end of the show, which actually should be close because we're
5 minutes.
Yes, we've got 5 minutes. Okay.
Before I turn into the pumpkin.
A few more things. Well, the confession. I got to play the confession here before you turn into a pumpkin, because at the end of the story, finally, and this is literally a true confession, I am a coward.
I am a coward. I have been my entire life. I tried to make up for it by collecting power. The power became so important, I couldn't let go. Not even when that meant losing the most important person in my life.
Your son.
Balefire is his name. After he left, I dedicated myself to finding him. I went down many, many paths until I found a curse that could take me to the land where he'd escaped.
Here.
And I found myself in this little town. There's only one thing left to do. Wait for the curse to be broken so that I could leave and find him.
But instead of looking for him, you brought magic.
Because I'm still a coward. Magic has become a crutch that I can't walk without. And even if I could, I now know I can never leave this place.
Because anyone who leaves forgets the people they love. So when you go to look for Balefire, you won't know him.
Magic comes with a price. Well, I have to break this new curse. That's why I was using magic that night you saw me down in the basement. I have lost so much that I loved. I didn't want to lose you again without you knowing.
Everything. So it's literally a confession here. I want you to know everything. I don't want you to leave without the truth. I thought it was a very touching scene, and I actually, for a moment, I believed that this is the conversion of Rumpelstiltskin. Who's going to be the next evil dude? Is Captain Hook going to be the next bad guy? But no, he couldn't get rid of the magic.
I think it's the beginning of his, because we talked about that with Regina. You know, we're seeing the beginning of her transition, her redemption. I think we're seeing the beginning of Rumpel's. It might take a while. But I really feel like the producers or writers are trying to give us new bad guys. You know, we're yes. Cora and Hook.
Or at least, transition. Just give a little bit more variety when it comes to evil people.
Yeah. And Darth Vader was saved.
Well, yes, of course. and saved, actually, by destroying a worse evil than what he was. So
sacrificing himself for his son.
Yeah. Many stories with sons and fathers and sacrifice. Bible stories? Just saying. But I love this scene. Brought the entire episode together with this confession, and it's all about truth is the beginning of or coming, confessing the truth about yourself and daring to acknowledge that you are a coward, even daring to admit that you're an addict, and that you can't do without magic. It still is a confession, and it can be the beginning of healing. So I think this is a. This might turn out to be a very pivotal moment in Rumpelstiltskin's story. And then to wrap things up, of course, we get a very tantalizing little tidbit about Neverland.
Harden up and get ready to set sail, mates. There's bumpy seas ahead.
What's the name of the place we're headed, Cap?
Neverland!
The vortex, the music, this is so Pirates of the Caribbean, and I thought it was amazing. Like, totally. Even it sounds like the Pirates of the Caribbean. You know, mates, let's go! I love it. And so they are going to Neverland. And then the final scene was the most intriguing one. And of course, we kind of skipped the moment where he lost his hand and got the hook. I thought it was a brilliant way to explain what happened. We get the reveal that the guy with red head is actually William Smee, who becomes basically Hook's secretary from now on. And then we get this.
Hello, Hook.
Hello, Cora. You told me you had something important you needed to show me. Sparkly dirt. Wonderful.
Just the remains of a magical wardrobe that can travel between worlds.
Is there enough to get us to where we need to go?
Not quite, but it's a start.
I'm almost ready to set sail. What's our port of destination?
Storybrooke.
Curious name. Is that where?
She is. And so is he.
Excellent. You'll be able to see your daughter. I can skin myself a crocodile.
I can skin myself a crocodile. I love it.
That was good.
Hook and Cora. Who'd have thought? Who'd have thought? It's awesome. So she is looking for a portal. That's why she gathered that dust, but it's not enough. So something more needs to be found. Where are they going to find it? And is this island Neverland? I think it is. It's probably what's left of Neverland, don't you think?
Possibly, yeah.
And so we know that Emma is there too, and Snow is there too. So we got Captain Hook, we got Cora, when is this taking place? Because Cora is supposed to be a prisoner right now, isn't she?
She's not a prisoner.
So this could be at the same time as Snow and Emma.
It's happening now.
So is Hook going to be the one who brings Emma back to Storybrooke? Oh, I'd love to hear everyone's theories. And of course, you can let us know by going to our blog. And that is very easy to find. onceuponatime.sqpn.com. We love reading your comments. And if you want to send us a voice feedback, you can go to sqpn.com. Click on the little tab on the right side. Leave us some SpeakPipe voicemail so we can hear your voice and play it here on the show. I want to thank our guests. It's time to, or co-host, time to turn back into pumpkins. I will see you all soon in another episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. That was the end of the sound clip.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.